now with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Houck.
Well, good afternoon, everybody, wherever you are in the world at this time. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, finding one's courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. Very excited to be with you here today, every Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, noon Pacific Standard Time. Each and every week, these broadcasts are dedicated to the integration of spirituality and our mental health. And speaking of this integration, this is something that has always been on my heart, so to speak, that I was trained during a time in which a lot of people didn't really appreciate, let alone accept the concept that spirituality and mental health could be integrated, that they always looked at those two subjects as either ends of the extreme, that spirituality is meant for the soul and mental health is just meant for, well, you know, the mind. But it is just interesting, this is the work that I do, this total integration of spirituality and mental health, because certainly how we see things, our perspective, what we feel, our behaviors, and so forth, as well as our spiritual relationships and our soul language, are all interconnected. Well, I'm Dr. James Houck, and like I said, I'm very happy to be with you here today. But if you'd like more information about me, or if you want to leave me your comments about today's show, go ahead. I invite you to visit the website. I'll give you the address here in a second. It is www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. And that's all one word. So www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. And if you would like to be part of the show, please call in. That number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And these broadcasts are podcast, in case you want to go back and listen again, or you can go back into the archives and listen to previous shows that you may have missed. Well, for those of you who are new to the program, I just like to say that I'm a firm believer, and again, this is how I was trained, that all of us come into the world already equipped and graced with everything we need in this life, and especially in terms of our giftedness or our skills or our talents, our strengths, character traits, and so forth. However, as we go along in life, and perhaps due to some unpleasant experiences, we may tend to hide our giftedness. We may think that there's really nothing special to us, or perhaps that's what we've been told. Or we push our giftedness way down so that others cannot see it because we think they're going to take advantage of it. Or perhaps we've been wounded in the past. Or like I said, perhaps we were told that we would never amount to anything. Or whatever other voice we heard telling us that there's really nothing much to us. But at any rate, when we do not realize our giftedness, we tend to go through life functioning from a place of woundedness instead of a place of healing and wholeness and uniqueness or achaitas. And we never fully enjoy life because we are filled with sadness and our wounds or trauma or grief or something that keeps us from really finding the depth of joy in our lives. And quite frankly, there is so much more to us than what we have become so far. And this is what reclaiming authenticity is all about, you know, having the courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. Well, how are you doing this day after Thanksgiving, you know, this traditional Black Friday? I hope everybody had a safe and pleasant Thanksgiving. So wherever you are in the world right now, perhaps you're out shopping or home taking advantage of cyber sales, please continue to be safe and by all means, behave yourselves out there. Okay? So let's begin by talking about a subject that most people are uncomfortable with, and that is silence. Now, after today, let's say you're out shopping, you can't wait to get home and you want to just decompress. You don't want to answer your phone. You don't want to be bothered. You just want to relax. You want to put your feet up and you want to enjoy some peace and quiet. I mean, hey, we've all been there, right? But craving some peace and quiet after a long, exhausting day, it's not exactly the same thing as being in silence. But how so? You would think that quiet and silence are the same thing, but not exactly. Whenever we think about quiet, we may tend to think that it is the absence of sound, or at least stifling the noise around us. We even have noise-canceling earphones these days, or earbuds and so forth. And these are helpful in eliminating background sound, which allow us to work from home or be on conference calls without all the distractions, or to listen to music more fully without interference. Now, if you don't have a pair of these earphones, I highly recommend that you add this to your list for Santa Claus this year. They make all the difference in the world. Okay, but still, even though they're noise canceling, it's still not the same thing as entering in to silence or being in silence. Because silence, on the other hand, is something entirely different. In a spiritual or a meditative sense, silence is intentionally entering in to a state of that inner peace and tranquility. And it goes way beyond just simply quieting our minds by dismissing all of the checklist of things that we have to do. Have you ever tried that? You know, in the beginning stages, if you're doing meditation, that the hardest thing for beginners is just to enter into silence, because as soon as we get into our meditative posture, we close our eyes, we want to go deep into that silence and that meditation, everything that we need to do or we need to get, or some other thing, they just seem to come up, and we are just bombarded with this inner chatter, or this monkey mind, as many people call it, this inner chatter, which is just hard to, you know, get out of the way so that we can enter into silence and find that inner peace and tranquility. And so entering into silence is more intentional. And it does take practice to just simply just push that excess noise and quieting our mind out of the way. Because when we set our intention to go into silence, we seek to communicate with God on a soul level. It's a state where words are not necessary. In fact, words just simply cannot follow. And this is when we discover that the human language is actually a hindrance to listening to the cry of the soul. Because you see, we can be in prayer, but if our minds are racing a mile a minute, then we are definitely not in silence. Now, I'll be the first one to admit that quiet and silence are often interchangeable in the mind of society. And I did a little checking earlier this week in this show preparation, because I've often heard it said that there is sound even in silence. And, you know, the reason I got, you know, hooked onto this subject of sound and silence, you know, maybe because I'm nostalgic, okay? And maybe I'm very fond of the Simon and Garfunkel song, echoing the sounds of silence, right? But does silence really have sound? Well, it all depends on who you ask. In fact, what I found in just doing a little background research and all this, that there are many interpretations out there of sound and silence. For example, according to Dr. Seth Horowitz of Brown University, he writes in his book, The Universal Sense, as in one of the five senses. He says, in truly quiet areas, you can even hear the sound of air molecules vibrating inside your ear canals or the fluid in your ears themselves. And this is something that I'm sure you've heard many times, because how many of us have walked the beaches and found that one seashell that is just unique, and we want to hold it up to our ears. And we were told as children that when we do that, we'll be able to hear the sound of the ocean. And, you know, let's not forget the fact that we were probably standing by the ocean at the same time that we were doing this. But let's say we get back to a quieter time and we hold that shell up to our ears and we hear, you know, what sounds to be the waves, you know, muffled waves crashing and the sound of that ocean. But actually, it is the molecules, as Dr. Horowitz has said, that are vibrating inside our ear canals, because we have fluid in there as well. And that is what we hear with the whoosh, whoosh, whooshing sound. Yeah, but it's still fun as a kid. You know, others may also interpret silence as a moment when something is left unsaid because words themselves were unnecessary. It could cause a gap in the conversation when silence itself replaces words. Okay. And silence can also be an indication of empathy. You know, when we're really tuning in to how another person is feeling about what they're saying, we're listening more to, let's say, the tone of their voice and the speed of their words rather than the actual words. As in, there is an awareness of pain or suffering in others that is so deep that words cannot express adequately. And we just see this time and time again, say at funerals or wakes or memorial services, where, you know, you can just, you don't need to express any words to be heard, but rather that expression can be communicated just by a simple glance or an embrace. So In one sense, I should say that we can say that silence has sound, but more accurately, silence has vibration. A vibration that can not only be heard by our ears and interpreted, you know, in our minds, but it's also felt deep within. And it's this characteristic of silence that requires no words. Like I said, words just cannot follow it. Our human language is very extensive, of course, but yet it's also very limited because it just simply cannot go to places, especially when there's a depth of suffering or pain or a cry of the soul or the language of the soul. Well, just as we have the capacity for language in general, we also have this same capacity for listening to and embracing this vibration. And this is why we need to realize that whenever we choose the words we say, they too carry with them not only the sound of energy, but with our words and our energy, we have the power to heal or the power to wound, because of the energy behind the words. And let's face it, we can, you know, we have very clever ways of just hurting people with our words. But when you attach tone and emotion to it, and you understand the energy behind it, it can be very damaging to another person. You know, the old saying of sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can never hurt me. That is a misnomer. That is something that saying needs to go, because, again, for any one out there who, as a child, we were told these things, you know, don't worry about what other people say to you because, and then we get that message of, you know, sticks and stones can really hurt, but the names can never hurt us. And yet how many of us have swallowed those names and really taken them on as an identity to where they've just flourished as guilt or, you know, more horrifically, the shame in our lives. And so there's a lot of energy, you know, attached to our words. And like I said, you know, our human language has the capacity to heal others or the power to wound. Well, I don't know if you remember this movie at all or not. This would be something great to watch this weekend. Maybe it's still on Netflix or maybe Amazon Prime or something, whatever you get. But if you remember the movie Mr. Holland's Opus, you recall that Mr. Holland was a music teacher. He was a lover of music. I think that if I remember the movie correctly, he was a lover of jazz, I think, or the blues or something of that combination. And in fact, he had a son and he named him after one of his favorite musicians. And that was Cole. His first son's first name was Cole. However, Cole was born without his sense of hearing. And this came to quite a shock to not only Mrs. Holland, but Mr. Holland felt as though God was playing a cruel joke on him. Because after all, he was a music teacher. He loved music. He listened to the music. He felt that music. And he wanted to pass that on to his son. But how could he do this if his son could not hear? Well, as the movie unfolded, as his son grew up, he loved to work on older cars. His son became a mechanic, just loved to turn wrenches, and he was happy when he was up to his elbows in grease. And interestingly, Cole learned how to use a mechanic's stethoscope to listen to the engine's vibration. He would be able to feel if the engine was running smoothly or if something in the engine was misfiring. And an underlying yet very subtle message in the movie was that human beings can be attuned to higher and higher vibrations that connect us with higher parts of ourselves. And this is displayed when Mr. Holland, the music teacher, he finally gets it. His son is much older now in the movie. And, you know, Mr. Holland was able to work through his dismay, his pain, his suffering, his how could God do this to me perspective. And he went into his own silence. And he asked himself the question, how can music reach somebody or another who cannot hear the melody? So what Mr. Holland ended up doing was he put on a high school concert. He had his band there in which the sounds of his band or orchestra were hooked up to these huge bright lights so that when there was any note or every drum beat and every clash of the cymbals resonated with this exploding flashes of colorful lights. It was truly astonishing to watch. It was almost as if it was the 4th of July all over again, but it was all came through the sound, the vibration, which he matched to the pulsing of these colors, of the pulsing of light. Well, we can feel sound and we can feel silence. Because after a sound is produced, the vibration of both continue. We can even listen to our own heartbeats through a stethoscope, but more importantly, we feel the vibration of our hearts. Okay, and I don't know, again, this is something that maybe you've done as a child, but maybe in the bathtub or in a pool, or I don't know, I never tried it in the ocean, but I did it in the pool, where you go underwater. And you're completely submerged and you are able to feel the pulse of your heart, the vibration of your heart. And you hear that, we hear that in our ears because of the pressure of the water. And we put our hands over our hearts and we can also feel that vibration at the same time. Okay. But let's take this a little bit deeper. Let's stay with the spiritual aspects of entering into silence and sound. And certainly, whenever we experience forgiveness and whenever we are able to release the negative energy and the pain that we've been hanging on to, those aspects of ourselves that no longer serve us, okay, we tune into higher frequencies or vibrations, as it were, because the things that no longer serve us are no longer blocking those things. Think of it as a music tuner, you know, one who uses a tuning fork, you know, by first striking the prongs and thereby releasing a perfect wave pattern. And then based on that, they adjust the sound of an instrument. They tune the instrument so that the two vibrations now are in sync. It's really fascinating to watch, and especially with a piano tuner. You know, they strike a note, they strike a chord, and then just by listening and the feel of the vibration, they are able to make those adjustments on, you know, in the back of the piano to bring it into a more correct tune. And even scripture reminds us of the importance of entering into silence through prayer and meditation so that we can benefit from that attunement. Because you see, vibration takes us into other levels of awareness. In fact, this is what the gurus and swamis and yogis teach, that in order to find God, you must first know how to enter into silence. And this is something that I just enjoyed my time in India and just sitting with the swamis and the yogis and just being in silence with them. You know, again, words weren't necessary. In fact, a lot of times I couldn't even find words. But just they kind of took me into silence, into the depth of silence, which I never knew. And when we had a chance to talk about it later, they said that's exactly where they go in order to find God. In fact, they go within themselves and they go into that silence in order to hear God more closely in their lives. Well, many ancient and contemporary practitioners of meditation often use the chanting of sacred sounds to help them be in sync with higher vibrations, such as chanting the sacred sound of Om. I mean, how many of you chant Om or just Om? Well, you can feel that vibration. It's a vibration of sound that's felt through our vocal cords that clears and opens up the sinuses. And this is something, you know, back in the 90s that science finally got on board with. They discovered that when we chant Om, you know, we can feel it in the vocal cords. And but they also discovered that chanting Om has cardiovascular benefits. You know, chanting Om for long, long periods of time reduces stress, relaxes our bodies, and brings down the blood pressure to that normal level. And it also brings our heart, the beats of our heart, within a regular rhythm. And it was kind of interesting when science and the scientists shared this fact with the practitioners or the gurus and swamis and so forth, the monks and the Tibetan monks and that, they just said, okay, we've already known this for centuries and centuries and centuries, but we're glad that you're finally getting on board with it as well, because it is something that, again, the vibration is what makes all the difference in the world. So the more we attune with the presence of God, you know, through the prayer or the meditation or entering into silence and so forth, the more we experience what Sardello calls the empathic resonance. it's this resonance of our soul coming into the resonance with the soul of God. I'm going to look at that tuning fork again. And what we discover in being more fully connected than to the soul of God is that we are connected to things that bring us great joy, as well as being connected to things that are disturbing and might even cause us great suffering. Because again, we go into silence in order to listen for God, but whenever we come out of that silence, it because we are strengthening our connection with the soul of God, we also are increasing our awareness of that which is around us and that which God is involved in. And still, we embrace all to be that extension of God's presence and grace and healing for people who are still looking and listening for God's presence and God's grace and God's healing. In other words, going into silence, we embrace all things in order to create that safe space for transformation to occur in all persons. And as people being transformed, it's interesting. And many of us want to pick and choose when and where, why and how God will use us. Well, instead, you know, since we expect that God is more than able to understand and embrace all aspects of our lives, then should we not be willing also to be the same for ourselves and others? And think of it this way. If we want to be used by God as healers, it should really not come as a surprise that God's going to place us in circumstances where there is tremendous pain, sorrow, and suffering. And if we want God to grant us this ancient wisdom, it should not come as any surprise to us that we are going to be placed in situations where people are impulsive and perhaps lack insight. And if we want God to use us as peacemakers, it should then be no surprise that God will place us in times of perhaps war or chaos or even death. In fact, to work for peace, as an example, we may have to expose ourselves to non-peaceful situations. And this is certainly true, that if we want to work to be more and more authentic, then we find ourselves at times being exposed or being around to inauthentic people or inauthentic situations. The question then for us is, when we listen for God, what do we hear? And this is an aspect of contemplation. Yes, we pray. Yes, we meditate. But whenever we contemplate, it really helps us reclaim our authentic selves as the silence that awakens the deepest desires of our soul. Now, before I fully understood the value of contemplation, I viewed silence as not only the absence of noise, but also the absence of God. I mean, to be quite honest, I knew that silence was there, or what I thought was silence, but I didn't know how to enter it or how to listen for God in the silence. In fact, my mind, or I should say my ego, just was not ready to comprehend how God communicates when I hear nothing. In fact, in you know, many ways, I was like David in Psalm 22. When it just starts off, you know, he writes, my God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from saving me, so far from the cries of my anguish? My God, I cry out to you by day, you don't answer. I cry out to you by night, but I find no rest. That's exactly where I was. I never understood silence. I never understood to listen for God in the silence, to listen to God's voice. Because again, I was putting it in human understanding, and my ego would not allow me to, let's say, go beyond that. Well, although Most people are uncomfortable with silence, or perhaps they convince themselves that God is uninterested in their circumstances. Silence is actually where we connect with the living presence of God. You know, we don't enter into the silence just for the sake of ridding ourselves of whatever sounds of the day we want to escape. You know, again, that's seeking peace and quiet. And many people would see this as a welcomed relief, especially if you're out there fighting crowds today on the traditional Black Friday after Thanksgiving. But on the contrary, we purposefully enter into silence with God in order to experience this empathetic resonance more clearly. And just to pull another example in here, just to help us further grasp this truth, just contemplate for a moment the silence of water. If you've ever noticed, water is, as I would say, the epitome of silence. Water only makes sound when it's moving against another surface, such as being poured into a glass or whenever we swallow it, or running over rocks, or crashing against the shore when the wind creates its waves. And yet, when it is still, the inaudible silence of water communicates how it is filled with life that gives life to all who depend upon it. A great movie that communicates this truth, one that I highly recommend, is a film that was made back in 2013. It was called The Cherokee Word for Water. And this movie followed the work that led Wilma Mankiller to become the first contemporary female chief of the Cherokee Nation. Like I said, I highly recommend it. I won't give it away the whole story, but certainly this metaphor of listening to the water comes through, as there was this great need to supply the people with water. So here's a great exercise that, again, I highly recommend, a great meditation. The next time you drink water, meditate on its characteristics of light and the sound that it makes. Contemplate how this molecular structure of water, you know, let's harken back to the days of chemistry here, H2O, gives life to our human breath, O2 and CO2, breathing in oxygen, breathing out carbon dioxide. And now consider how God has breathed life into us and where we feel the breath, the matter, and movement of God in our life. And to take this meditation one step further, even listen for, as we swallow the water, enter into this silence of gratitude for water's life-giving properties. Deeply connect with how the essence of water helps us discover our inner voice, so that we could be a voice, perhaps, for those who have no water, let alone who are unable to speak. Well, I would really love to hear your heart on this subject of sound, vibration, and silence. So if you'd like to call in, again, this number is 888-627-6008, and I'll be taking your calls after the break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Houck, and I'll be back with you in 1 minute. Okay, welcome back. I'm Dr. James Hauken. You are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Again, just if you're, you know, joining the program at this time, just want to, you know, just wish you a belated happy Thanksgiving. I trust everybody's Thanksgiving was nice and safe. And, you know, here we are on Black Friday with all the hustle and bustle of the noise that's out there. And it's very befitting to talk about silence. But before we do that, I just want to share with you a word about next week's show, December 4th. Can you believe we're coming into December? Yes, we are. Next Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, noon Pacific Standard Time. And we'll be talking about one of my favorite quotes from one of my favorite Shakespeare stories, and that's Hamlet, and that is to sleep, perchance to dream, and oh, what dreams may come. So, no, I will not read the story of Hamlet. I'll just use that quote, and we'll go from there. We'll talk about dreams. We'll talk about what did this mean in Hamlet's time, or I should say Shakespeare's time, and just exactly what's being conveyed here. But we'll have fun talking about dreams and so forth, and just share with you my philosophy now that I see, you know, our dreams as messages about ourselves, from ourselves, and to ourselves. So I invite you to tune in for that next Friday, December 4th. Well, earlier in the broadcast, I was talking about how we crave quiet, but we can be uncomfortable at the same time with silence. And as I said, you know, if you're out in the hustle bustle of, you know, shopping or whatever, or even let's say yesterday, you're just trying to find a quiet place just to collect your thoughts and so forth, that's good and appropriate. And we all need that kind of rest. But it's not the same thing as entering into silence, because whenever we enter into silence, we are very much intentional of just setting that time aside to go into silence with the purpose of listening for the voice of God and getting to that level in which it's a soul-to-soul communication. One of my favorite Mother Teresa quotes, I just love this story because she just really sums up exactly what this kind of soul-to-soul communication looks like on a daily basis. She was in an interview one time, and the interviewer asked her, you know, I'm just curious, Mother Teresa, I'm just curious here. What do you say to God when you pray? And she was silent, and then she finally spoke, and she said, I don't say anything. And that kind of threw the interviewer, and so the interviewer says, okay, but what does God say to you? And she was, again, silent, and then when she was ready to speak, she said, nothing. God doesn't say anything to me. We listen to each other. We listen to that soul. It's that soul-to-soul communication. So, and that's just a beautiful way that she just summed up her prayer life, just going into that silence and both God and herself listen to each other. They listen to the language of the soul. Well, on that note, let's kind of shift gears here a little bit, and just take this in a different direction here, because we must not only be comfortable with silence, but certainly we might have to be comfortable in silence, you know, because silence does carry a sound. And with that sound, as with any sound, there is vibration. And there's certainly more to silence than just waiting to talk. And that's very common in conversations where, you know, we're often told even today that, well, are you really listening to a person or are you just waiting to talk? And if we're honest with ourselves, we might say, well, there's times when I listen and then there's times that I wait so that I could talk. I mean, that's just, it happens. Okay. But again, being aware of this, then what do we do? Well, in counseling therapy, again, this is how I was taught early on, that whenever a client is silent, it's often understood as displaying some form of inner resistance, of not wanting to talk, that could be seen as an act of defiance. But this is not always the case. You know, a lot of times clients just can't put into words the level of their suffering. And if there's one lesson that I've learned over the years, it's that suffering and silence often go hand in hand. And this is also another way to understand the vibration that's occurring in silence. That when a person or a people are forced into silence, they believe eventually that they have no voice. But how do we reach beyond the stories that people share? How do we reach beyond that and reach into the silences that perhaps they feel as though they have no voice? Well, we can listen for what's not being said. We can listen to what's also being said. You know, a lot of times people say so much more in silence than what they say in words, whether it be body language or even how much they are willing to share of their story. And we can certainly hold the space for another's story to emerge when we understand the power and the vibration behind silence. And this is the phenomena that author Urvashi Bhataliya understood all too well. She wrote a book that I had read years ago. It was entitled The Other Side of Silence. And when I found that title, it's like, okay, I got to know more about what's going on here. And so as I purchased it, got it home, read it, and her entire work, she wrote about how 50 years later, the people of India and Pakistan still grieve the partition of 1947. In fact, one of the things that she had mentioned in her book, that the people of all faiths, there were Hindu, there was Islam, there was Christianity, Jewish, and Sikhism. All those people lived together before the partition. And when India finally sought independence, that's when, the powers that be got together and started to draw boundaries on a map. And she said that almost the people she interviewed, she said they almost felt like they drew a line down the hearts of the people, where they had to get on one side of the line or another, regardless of who they were. And of course, that's where Pakistan, the country Pakistan, came from, you know, during this partition. And so the people who embraced Islam, they wanted to get on the side or the boundary of Pakistan, and then Hindu and Sikh were on the side of India. And there was a lot of bloodshed that had occurred, a lot of pain, a lot of suffering, a lot of hatred, just because they started to draw lines on a map, or perhaps they drew lines right down the hearts of the people. And like I said, she wrote some 50 years later of just how people are still grieving this partition, as well as just feelings of outrage and pain and suffering. And she also noticed that when she interviewed people about how has life changed for you, she noticed that men and women not only told their stories differently, but she also noticed how the women had more periods of silence in their stories. And she says, for instance, if their husbands or their sons were around, they would take over the conversation or the interview, and that often made women lapse into a sort of silence. And she noticed that this was not uncommon because, she says, many oral histories have written about the difficulty of speaking to and with women. Or they also noted the difficulty of learning to listen differently, often listening to hidden nuances, or, as she says, the half-said thing. And all in all, she is convinced that it was the silence which was sometimes more eloquent than speech. Again, fascinating book. So if you love the history of the partition, or just how people live in silence and how they tell their stories, as well as listening to the silence in between the words or the sentences, again, that is a book that I highly recommend, The Other Side of Silence. Well, in the Oglala Lakota tradition, Frank Fool's Crow, he lived 1890 to, I believe, late 90, yeah, like 1989, almost 1990. I think he might have passed in 1989. He taught that in order to become holy, that is, one through whom the Great Spirit could work in and through to heal others, a person must first become like a hollow bone. And Frank Fool's Crow believed that people are not to seek transformation for their own power and honor, but instead they are to be a pipeline that connects God, or in the Lakota tradition, the Wakantanka, and the people. And it's this process of becoming a hollow bone, and he said that it began when people asked God to rid themselves of anything that would impede them in any way, things such as, let's say, doubt, or questions, or selfishness, or reluctance. And as a result, psycho-spiritually transformed people would then need to see themselves as these unobstructed conduits through whom God could work to be this blessing to others. And when you think about it, the hollow bone is a powerful symbol for emptying ourselves of everything that hinders and impedes the life of God's Spirit. And maybe we were taught in biology class that bones provide our bodies not only with our physical frame, but also within themselves, that they contain marrow, or this flexible tissue that's responsible for producing blood and how it supports our immune system. Yet, in understanding this concept of becoming a hollow bone, we have to first acknowledge our need to, metaphorically speaking, die to ourselves. And ironically, a hollow bone is both dead in that it doesn't contain any blood or marrow, and at the same time, it's also alive because it's the Spirit of God flowing freely in and through us for the benefit of others. And that's the key. The Spirit of God flowing freely in and through us for the sake of somebody else. And this act is not a one-time event, but it's for us an ongoing process of examining and letting go of ourselves in order to take hold of something better for the sake of humanity. And certainly, you know, God is speaking all the time, yet what keeps us from hearing God's voice? And getting back to prayer, meditation, and contemplation, it's through these things that we not only need to stop our mind's chatter, you know, that monkey mind, but also to open our hearts regarding how we see and listen for God, especially in silence, entering into that silence in order to hear God more clearly. But apart from listening for God, where else do we see God in all things? Do we see in the beauty of a sunset and the sun's glow at sunset? Do we focus on hearing God's voice in the cries and laughters of others? How do we feel God in the midst of wind and rain? Are we able to hear God in the sound of the owl or the eagle or the hawk? Similarly, should we not also look for God in the tears of a child, or listen for the voice of God in every heartbreak, or find the voice of God giving us voice to our losses? Well, in his book, Night, Elie Wiesel writes about a specific time when suffering in silence took on a whole new meaning. He writes, "One day, when we came back from work in the concentration camps, we saw three gallows rearing up in the assembly place, three black crows, and it was time for roll call. There were SS all around us, machine guns trained, and which was the traditional ceremony, three victims in chains, and one of them, a little servant, the sad-eyed angel, were brought in front of us. The SS seemed more preoccupied, more disturbed than usual, to hang a young boy in front of thousands of spectators was no light matter. And the head of the camp read the verdict. And it seemed as though all eyes were on this child. He was lividly pale, almost calm, but he was biting his lips. The gallows threw its shadows over him. And this time, the lager capo refused to act as the executioner. Three SS guards replaced him. The three victims mounted together onto their chairs. Their necks were placed at the same moment within the nooses. And all of a sudden, there was this cry, 'Long live liberty!' And it came from the two adults. But this child was silent. Where is God? Where is he? Someone behind me asked. At a sign from the head of the camp, the three chairs tipped over. Total silence throughout the camp. On the horizon, the sun was setting. 'Bare your heads,' yelled the head of the camp. And his voice was quite raucous. 'But we are all weeping. Cover your heads.' Then the march past began. The two adults were no longer alive. Their tongues had hung swollen and they were blue-tinged. But the third rope was still moving. Being so light, the child was still alive. And for more than a half of an hour, he stayed there, struggling between life and death, dying in slow agony under our eyes. And we had to look him full in the face. And I remember that he was still alive when I passed in front of him. His tongue was red. His eyes were not yet glazed. And behind me, I heard the same man asking, 'Where is God now?' And I heard a voice within me answer him, 'Where is God? God is here. God is hanging here on the gallows.'" Entering into silence is, if I can say this, is not for the faint of heart. It takes us into the depths of our soul and listening for the soul of God in ways in which it takes us right out of ourselves and places us right into the heart of where people live and die. And yet that is the power of silence, because exactly that is where we find God, in the everyday silences. Well, I hope that you've had a pleasant Thanksgiving. I hope that you do take time and enter into silence with the intention to listen more fully to not only your soul, but also the soul of God. I am Dr. James Houck, and you have been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Please join me next Friday when we will be talking about dreams and Hamlet. Do take care, and God bless.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding to buy a book by Dr. Houck, it's all there. Just wander on over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Friday at noon Pacific time on PBS Radio TV.